The next case is Roberts versus Minnesota. It's A19-0389. I see the attorneys are in the courtroom and we're ready to hear argument when you're ready. I know that you both are experienced appellate advocates, but just a reminder, state your name when you begin your argument for the record. And the podium goes up and down if you want to adjust it.
May it please the court, opposing counsel Ms. Burdorf, I'm Jennifer Lauerman and I represent the appellant Dennis Charles Roberts. In 624712, subdivision 5, the legislature statutorily defined a crime of violence to be felony convictions or attempts to commit any of the enumerated offenses. Here, appellant has a juvenile adjudication for one of the enumerated offenses. Thus, the question before the court is whether he has a crime of violence as required to impose criminal liability under 624713, subdivision 1-2. Because the plain language of this in the statutory definition of crime of violence includes felony convictions and omits juvenile adjudications, this court should hold that Roberts' juvenile adjudication for fifth-degree controlled substance crime is not a crime of violence under 624712 subdivision 5. And this court should accordingly vacate Roberts' criminal conviction for possession of a firearm in violation of 624713 subdivision 1-2. The district court was wrong when it denied Roberts' challenge to the accuracy of his plea. The district court reasoned, if conviction in 624712 is limited to adult proceedings, then the adjudication language in 624713 is meaningless. But the canons of statutory construction require the court to give effect and meaning to all the relevant words of the statute. The district court mistakenly relied on State versus Henderson to reach this conclusion. The Henderson court did not have an unambiguous statute or a statutory definition to work from. Thus, it engaged.
Could we just go to the 624.713 subdivision 1-2? Because it does say that a person who's been convicted of or adjudicated delinquent or convicted as an extended jurisdiction juvenile for committing in this state or elsewhere a crime of violence is ineligible to possess ammunition or firearms. So that's, do you read that statute as being pretty clear? Take out the crime of violence for a moment, but it clearly anticipates that a person who is adjudicated delinquent. I mean, how do you get around that part of it? I mean, because if aren't we as a canon of construction to give effect to every wording in the statute to try to look at it in conjunction with in the context of the other statutes as well?
If you find 624713 to be ambiguous, then you should give effect to the parts. But in the part, it specifically says crime of violence includes crimes in other states or jurisdictions which would have been crimes of violence as herein defined, and it points us back over to 624712 subdivision 5. And that statute unambiguously excludes juvenile adjudications.
Well, it depends on how you look at the purpose of that. It's a definitional statute, correct?
It is a definitional statute, and the legislature has the power to define crimes and the crimes and offenses. And that that authority is exclusive to the legislature.
But how do you address the Moon analysis, which said, okay, it talks about, you know, felony convictions, but we are, you know, if you look at the Moon analysis, they're basically saying that even though it may be a felony that's reduced to a misdemeanor, we're really looking at the elements of these enumerated crimes. We don't care about the disposition.
Moon is inapposite for several reasons.
All right, why is it?
In Moon, the defendant pleaded guilty to felony theft. He had a felony conviction. Roberts never had a felony conviction. He had a juvenile adjudication. And in Moon, that felony conviction was determined to be a misdemeanor by operation of law.
But the main thing that Moon does, though, the court says, look, this is the they looked at what the purpose was of that statutory definition, and they said the real purpose of that is to give it's to designate which people have committed these crimes.
So yeah. I think it's important to note that Moon used the old version of 624.712, which had language that would have included or could have included an EJJ adjudication or a juvenile adjudication, because that old version, the pre-2003 version, referenced offenses, felony violations, or felonious offenses. And so that old version that's at issue in Moon could have included a juvenile adjudication, but now we have a new definition enacted by the legislature in 2003.
Well, in looking at the definitions, though, I mean, there's other statutes that we should consider. Another one is the statute that says that a person under the jurisdiction of the juvenile court who's been charged with committing a crime of violence is ineligible to possess firearms under criminal penalty. And that's 624.713, subdivision 1-7.
But
so with your interpretation, I mean, so someone who's just been charged with that, a juvenile who's just been charged with it, can't possess, but as soon as they get adjudicated, then they can possess firearms? Is that what you're claiming here? Wouldn't that be an absurd interpretation?
Robert's position has never been that he is not banned from possessing the firearm. Robert's position is that, appellant's position, that you cannot impose criminal liability for that possession under 624.712 subdivision 5.
The statute under which he was charged is 713 sub 1 parent 2.
Or, excuse me, that's what I meant to say. I'm sorry.
And that statute makes somebody ineligible if they were convicted of felony or adjudicated delinquent of a felony or convicted as an EJJ for committing a felony. Correct?
So when you read that statute, I think your reading and your intonation implied that there's a comma between between adjudicated delinquent or convicted as an extended jurisdictional juvenile. There is no Oxford comma there that would clearly delineate a juvenile adjudication from juvenile adjudication on the EJJ spectrum. And this court had said in Giles, I believe it was, that EJJ statute's not clear when an adjudication in the EJJ jurisdiction becomes a conviction. And so if you look...
I mean, I think there's one clause set off by commas which says, or adjudicated delinquent or convicted as an EJJ for committing. So I think that it could be that, you know, adjudicated delinquent for committing or convicted as an EJJ for committing, but there's two different scenarios that are considered there in that clause, you know, which is basically the juvenile scenario, and that's what we have.
But
doesn't, I mean, The offense of conviction, the statute setting forth the offense of conviction expressly considers the possibility that somebody would have a juvenile adjudication of any of the felonies that are listed in the other definitional statute, right? I should say, expressly considers the possibility that a person might have a juvenile adjudication for committing a crime of violence. Exactly what we have here.
The statute that he's convicted under is ambiguous because it's subject to more than one interpretation. It does mention a juvenile adjudication, but it doesn't have a comma between that and the...
Why is that comma necessary? I don't understand that.
That would be the Oakhurst-Derry case, that for lack of the Oxford comma, you read that as a whole phrase.
Well, except you're omitting the ors, because if you look at it, it says comma or adjudicated delinquent or convicted as an extended jurisdiction juvenile for committing comma. So it would seem like they're by separating that out, it looks like they're saying convicted of, so they're talking about convictions, and then they're basically with those two commas following that, I guess it's the comma that precedes in this state or elsewhere, comma, or excuse me, it's convicted of, comma, are adjudicated delinquent, are convicted as an extended jurisdiction juvenile for committing. Between those, that clause seems to specifically refer to juveniles, to juvenile dispositions.
So,
yeah, I mean that's how you could read it.
You could read it that way. You could read it the other way.
Except you've got or. I mean, you're kind of reading the or out of there. Because it seems like the or and the comma placement seems to say you've got the adults and you've got the juveniles. And the juveniles, the dispositions are adjudicated, are convicted.
I would differ slightly with what you said, which is you have the adult conviction or you have the people that are adjudicated or convicted under EJJ jurisdiction. My client was not convicted under EJJ, was not adjudicated under EJJ jurisdiction. He was a mere juvenile adjudication. And if we're looking at the statutory schema and we're trying to give effect to everything, we can also look to other statutes that involve the same thing. And 609.165 is a relevant statute that also penalizes possession of a firearm. And that statute specifically says any person who has been convicted of a crime of violence as defined in 624.712 sub 5. That statute, which does essentially the same thing, does not include that language referencing EJJ or referencing the juvenile adjudication. And so if you look at the legislative...
Your client, I haven't seen that statute, but your client would have, you're saying, I think, a better argument under...
I'm saying if you look to a similar statute that criminalizes basically the same thing, it doesn't have that language that we're finding problematic.
So, I mean, does that indicate the legislature, has chosen to do it in different ways and here has chosen to make it broader, to encompass juvenile adjudication?
Well, if you look back to the definitional statute back in 2003, pre-2003, like I said, that language that was used then actually would encompass or could encompass a juvenile adjudication because it uses the language felony violations, felonious enumerated offenses, and references offenses. It doesn't talk about a conviction. It doesn't talk about an adjudication. It's a lot less clear and could have included more. But then the legislature specifically defined it to be felony convictions.
Well, let's look at 260B, point 24, subdivision 1B, and that provides that a person who was adjudicated delinquent for or convicted as an extended jurisdiction juvenile of a crime of violence as defined is not entitled to ship, transport, process or receive a firearm for the remainder of the person's lifetime. Mm-hmm. Again, that statute seems to indicate a clear legislative intent that juveniles who are convicted of these crimes can't possess firearms. I mean,
absolutely.
And there's no dispute that possession of drugs, fifth-degree possession of drugs, is a crime of violence, right? There's no dispute that that in and of itself is a crime of violence if you consider the elements, right?
A conviction for would be for fifth-degree controlled substance would be under the definition of crime of violence, but an adjudication would not be under the plain language of the unambiguous statute defining crime of violence.
Then why would the legislature in two statutes actually specifically say that someone who is adjudicated of a crime of violence can't possess guns?
We're not arguing whether or not they can possess guns. We're arguing whether or not the legislature is imposing criminal liability for possessing the guns. And that's a different question. That's the question that respondent got hung up on in their brief. That's not the question. The legislature certainly can say, and apparently has said, you cannot possess guns. But if you look at the statutes penalizing the possession, they don't say that. I see I'm out of time.
All right, thank you.
You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jean Burdorf. I'm an assistant Hennepin County attorney, and I represent the state of Minnesota respondent in this case. The plain language of 624.713 subdivision 1B includes juvenile adjudications for crimes of violence. It just says that. Robertson,
well, except the argument is that when you look up the word crime of violence, it says convictions.
That's exactly right. It's our position, as we've argued in our brief, that this adjudication actually does qualify as a conviction for purposes of the gun prohibition ban only.
All right. What case or what authority do you
I think the authority for that is the statute itself, 260B245. If you look at the structure of that statute, that's the section, 245. I'll just refer to it that way for ease. The first subdivision says, what is the effect of an adjudication? And it discusses all the various ways that we are going to treat a juvenile adjudication. The operative language, I think, is sort of in the middle of that paragraph, and it says, nor shall an adjudication be deemed a conviction of a crime except as otherwise provided in this section or section 260B255. 260B255 is a section that deals with the revocation of EJJ designation. So that's really not an issue in this case. But it says, except as otherwise provided in this section. And then if you look at the remainder of the section, it's paragraph B, which says a person who is adjudicated delinquent for or convicted as an EJJ juvenile of a crime of violence can't have guns. And to me, when you read those together, the only rational reading is that B is an exception to A, which means we generally, and I agree with this, we generally do not treat juvenile adjudications as convictions for most purposes. The sole exception in 245B is when we're talking about the gun ban. So it's our position that the legislature clearly intended by structuring this section that way to, in fact, treat juvenile adjudications as convictions. In other words, it qualifies as a conviction. It's interesting to me that if you actually look at what the statutory definition of a conviction is, it's in 609.02, I think it's subdivision 5. It's just the general criminal code definition of conviction. It says what it is it's a guilty plea or a verdict of guilty that is accepted and recorded by the court. That's what a conviction is. That certainly would apply to what happened to Mr. Roberts in juvenile court. There is no exception in the general criminal code for adjudications. The reason we don't treat adjudications as convictions is because of 260B245. So that's, I mean, it's certainly, absent that section, we would consider an adjudication a conviction. But as I mentioned, our primary argument really is, right, the general rule is not a conviction except for purposes of the gun ban. That really is the only reading that fits with the plain language of 624.713 subdivision 1, parent 2. I want to talk, I mean, I've obviously argued about reading out the adjudication language. I'm not going to reiterate that here. I think that argument is clear. I do want to address briefly the issue of the Oxford comma. When I read the briefs again last night, I noticed that I didn't address it in our brief, and it's probably because I'm not great at grammar and didn't really understand the argument. So an Oxford comma is something that when you have a list of three things, like you do in the statute 624.713, so it's convicted of, adjudicated for, or convicted as an EJJ. So we have three things. In those circumstances, an Oxford comma isn't necessary before an and. So this argument that the comma had to be there to separate out the language about adjudication is simply false, just under general rules of grammar. Oxford commas are optional. They're stylistic. I went to college with a whole bunch of journalism majors, and they used to vigorously debate the Oxford comma issue, but there is no case in Minnesota that I could find that said an Oxford comma is mandatory. So I think the more fair reading, because it is a three-item list, is simply that it is intended, the or is intended to actually be disjunctive. For that proposition, I'd direct the court to Priggy. I think it's Priggy.
Well, there's two ors.
And they're both disjunctive. It means there's three separate things here. We're really, and when there are three things, again, the Oxford comma is optional. What's interesting to me is if you reference back to 260B.245 subdivision 1B, the general gun prohibition, you'll see that adjudicated delinquent for, comma, or adjudicated, it is separated out. There's an independent clause for EJJ offenders, and there that comma in front of or makes sense because there's only two items. Turns out the Oxford comma depends on how many things you have in your list. But it also doesn't make sense that the gun prohibition in 260B.245 wouldn't include adjudications, but somehow the legislature would have intended in 624.713 to exclude them. That's just nonsensical and leads to an inconsistency I don't think the legislature could have reasonably intended. I want to talk, so the other argument about the plain meaning of 624.713 is that that language, adjudicated delinquent for or adjudicated as an EJJ, is somehow a single concept. Again, I think the surplusage case that I said in my brief sort of takes care of that and the use of the disjunctive. The comparison to MnStat 609.165, which is another gun ban in Minnesota, I think is... it really is inapposite for this reason. 609.165 is a much broader statute and has broader application than 624.713. And Judge Johnson, you asked a question, could the legislature simply have meant to criminalize similar but different conduct in different statutes? The answer to that question is yes. So I don't really think the language in 609.165 informs this court's decision in this case at all. The last argument I want to address is the argument appellant apparently agrees that he was banned by virtue of his adjudication for fifth-degree controlled substance crime from having a gun, but this is about imposing a criminal prohibition. It's our position that the criminal prohibition is the enforcement mechanism for the ban. There is no other. I mean, it seems sort of absurd to me that the legislature would have created a ban and then done nothing about an enforcement mechanism. I mean, that would have, there is no civil remedy articulated. It appears to me from the structure generally of the scheme that the criminal penalty is the enforcement mechanism, and to read that out leaves you with a situation where there's a ban that is, as a practical matter, unenforceable, and that is absurd and can't have been what the legislature intended.
Well, could I ask you this? Do you think there's an ambiguity in the statute?
I don't.
All right. So, and why not?
Because the language, I think the language is clear. It says convicted of or adjudicated delinquent or convicted. I think that is plain. And I think, I mean, were the court to move to ambiguity, first of all, the surplusage canon of construction which I also had to look up, I'm terrible at grammar, is actually an intrinsic canon that is on the same playing field as plain meaning. And so to me, if what we're doing is reading out the words or adjudicated delinquent, that would be inconsistent with that canon, which is equally compelling as just sort of the plain reading.
So you might disagree with the district court judge who wrote, well, this statute is not a model of clarity.
I do disagree with the district court judge. I do. I also disagree with his reference to this being a good argument.
And in this canon that we have to read it in the context of the entire statute, and the statute has to be interpreted to give effect to all its provisions, are those canons we utilize to determine if it's ambiguous or not ambiguous?
Could you say that one more time? I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, there's two canons that are applicable here. One is that you have to read it in the context of the entire statute. Another is you have to be in the statute has to be interpreted to give effect of all the provisions.
Yep.
A word, phrase, or sentence should be deemed to be superfluous, void, or insignificant. But those canons, are those canons we utilize in determining whether there's an ambiguity or not?
Actually, they are canons that apply at the same, if I understand this, it's pre-ambiguity and post-ambiguity canons. The superfluous canon, I can tell you from Priggy, the case I've cited in my brief, that is a pre-ambiguity canon. So you look at that as you're trying to determine what the plain meaning of the statute is.
All right.
So if the words are there, as they are here, or adjudicated delinquent, and a reading that is being advanced would essentially render those words superfluous, that is inconsistent with the plain meaning of the statute. Okay. Was that a better articulation?
All right. Okay. That's fine. All right. Now, you also made a bold statement, and you said that this adjudication is not a conviction except for a gun ban. What authority can you point us to for that proposition?
I probably should have qualified that bold statement. You're right.
Okay.
With a caveat, under this statute, it really isn't a conviction under 260B245, because certainly Giles stands for the opposite proposition. If you look at Giles, that was whether a juvenile adjudication, which had not been turned into a conviction for EJDA yet, whether that adjudication qualified as a prior conviction for purposes of the 60911 mandatory minimum. And this court in Giles said, yes, it is. That qualifies a conviction for purposes of that mandatory minimum. So certainly there are other examples in case law that hold that a juvenile adjudication can be treated as a conviction for purposes of usually sentencing. So again, I probably should have qualified my statement more carefully, but I really just meant in that statutory context.
Do you think this case should be published?
It is an issue of first impression in that this court, neither this court nor the Minnesota Supreme Court have explicitly addressed this argument. So certainly it would, I think, fit within your criteria for publication.
And what would your syllabus point be?
A juvenile adjudication for a crime of violence qualifies as a conviction for Minnesota's gun prohibition ban. Unless the court has additional questions, I've gone through all the points I wish to make. It's our position that you should affirm the post-conviction court here and affirm Mr. Roberts' convictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any rebuttal? Then I would ask you what your view is on publication.
I think publication would be appropriate, given that this is an issue of first impression. It has potential to have statewide impact. The courts have never considered this. They've never considered whether or not.
And I can guess what your syllabus point would be, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. So what would yours be?
My syllabus point would be that a juvenile adjudication for an enumerated offense in 624.712 subdivision 5 is not a crime of violence for purposes of criminal liability under 624.713 subdivision 1-2. And I think it's that succinct. If you look at, respondent mentioned the definition of a conviction that's in 609, I think 02 is what she said. But the legislature has also defined conviction to include juvenile adjudications in other statutes. And in State versus Noggle, the statute at issue was 609-3455, and it was subdivisions, I think, 6 and 7. And they talked about conditional release. And under subdivision 6, you get 10 years of conditional release for a first violation. And the issue in Noggle was it didn't include attempt in attempted violation. Under subdivision 7, you get lifetime conditional release if you have a previous or prior conviction for one of the enumerated offenses. And interestingly, in 609-3455, subdivision 1B, the legislature defined conviction, and it said that a conviction included a conviction as an extended jurisdictional juvenile under section 260B1.130 for a violation of or an attempt to violate section, and it enumerated some offenses, if the adult sentence has been executed. So when they define conviction in that context, they specifically mentioned the EJJ jurisdiction, and they specifically mentioned that the adult sentence had to be executed. So if the court had intended for the definition in subdivision 5 of 624712 to include juvenile adjudications, as the respondent is saying it should, they know how to do that. They did it in 609-3455. They didn't do it here. And they had done it in the previous version of that statute when they talked about violations and they talked about felonious enumerated offenses and they talked about offenses. That language included it. But when, for whatever reason, and I don't know, and it's not our job to speculate, they didn't include that when they rewrote that definition in 2003.
Well, can I ask you, when, and a point was made by the respondent, that with regard to MnSTAT section 260B245, that basically says a person who is adjudicated delinquent for a crime of violence is not entitled to ship, transport, possess, or receive a firearm, that if we adopt your analysis, that there would be no enforcement provision for that statute.
So I don't think that that's actually accurate, because the police seize guns that people have that they're not supposed to have all the time. And so there are civil remedies that could be imposed. The police can seize the weapon. They could impose civil fines. You go fishing without a license, they can take your boat. So there are remedies other than this criminal action that would land someone in prison for 5 years that could be used to remedy that. So I think the statement that without having this statute include juvenile adjudications, there is no remedy and that there's no reason for people not to have them, I don't think that's accurate, given that there is a whole panoply of civil things that can be put in place or that may be in place. I'm sorry, I didn't look in the civil stuff. That would address that concern. So I think there are other options other than sending someone with a mere juvenile adjudication to prison for 5 years when the plain statutory definition does not include a juvenile adjudication. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is, once again, interesting and well-briefed and well-argued.